Well, we got a song to dedicate here to all the guys doing hard time out there in the gulags of America. How about it? Some old-timers, Stonewall Jackson, very, very popular singer in country music for a long time. White Aryan Resistance calling, White Aryan Resistance calling. This is Terrible Tommy right here in the bunker right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern, where we played that song for you, dedicated that song to all the boys out there doing time in the gulags of America. Yeah. It is November 20th, 2014. It's Thor's Day here. One of my favorite days, Thor's Day. How about that? You know what? It's about 20 degrees outside, and that wind chill is like 10 below. It is colder than hell, man. So I went out this morning, but I'm hiding out in the bunker this afternoon. I told you before, I feed the birds, and I get a lot of birds in my patio. And by God, there are hardly any birds out there today. I'll tell you that. They're hunkering down. Well, let's see what's happening here. We got a letter from one of our prisoners, inmates. George Loeb Jr. He's down there in Florida, in a hellhole in Florida. Dear Brother Tom, greetings, as always. Much respect to you, sir. I just heard a joke. Can't believe I've never heard it before. What happens when you put your hand in a jar of jelly beans? Answer, the black one steals your watch. I hope that's as new to you as it was to me. Bank statement for October just received shows a $25 deposit from you. Thank you very much, brother. That will be tuna wraps. And more, of course. Sometimes a few of us get together. Everybody puts in an item or two in. It's not just prison, not just a prison thing. I think people are surprised that inmates cook and eat together. I've actually read about it, as if it's an amazing thing or something. Really, the only amazing thing is that my little circle of friends are not necessarily the guys you might think. Obviously, you know I'm not in a gang. And while over the years none have been black, race is not the only criterion. It's integrity here, how they act, to my knowledge. I don't even judge their convictions, not after my trial. One guy has a horrendous charge, but in the years I have known him, he's never once done or said anything even questionable. And maybe it's the influence of Christianity for good or bad that allows me to accept such people. Sometimes it's definitely been for the good. I had a half-Jew cell partner once. I don't know whose idea that was, but he talked a lot. When he got out, he married and had a daughter and had a had her baptized, although it was definitely mostly the mother who decides or something. Some of these letters are a little hard to read. I'd like to think that I had at least a little influence. Genetically Jewish is a reality, I know, but I think certainly it's better than anyone remotely Jewish, 25%, not be raised into that religion of arrogance and hate. Well, I think you could call a lot of Jews as an ethnic group, but as a race, no. I wouldn't say that I've become a liberal, however, and even I recognize too much relativism. Take the recent election. Should I be happy that the Republicans won? Well, I'm happier, maybe, than if the Democrats had won. That's relativism. But of course, I see the Republicans as soft. I'm NS politically, but even on that, I'm in favor of carrot and a stick. For example, I think there should be marijuana legalization nationwide, and I think that the sale of heroin should be punished by death. Wow. I know a couple of guys that I actually like who are heroin addicts, and I hate what it's done to them. They are permanently changed. It's like a mostly incurable disease. Anyway, we just need an entirely new government, and I'm not sure it can be incrementally, even if there were such intent. The whole thing needs to be scaled down on the federal level. I don't know why there is a Department of Education, for example. Each state has its own. Not only is that good enough, it's better fit for the people in the state. Definitely think that the FBI should be reduced to information exchange and have no investigatory or arrest powers. Each state has its own cops, its own crime labs, and so on. If not, they can contract with the private firms to do the DNA testing and the like, or other bigger states. The FBI is entirely corrupt and incompetent in the way they investigate crimes. I'd rather have 10 FBI guys than one good New York City detective looking for me. And that's the truth. As for politically motivated, they are especially interested in putting racists, white racists, in prison, and they stoop to any level to do it. But if they know that a so-called racist was framed by conspiratorial perjury, for example, they will never investigate that. Hence, I'm still here in prison. Sorry, brother, this is a turning into a crappy letter. I've been stressed like a lab rat lately. I keep trying to look for a light in this darkness. I was actually hoping Obama might do some of what he promised. For example, he promised to repeal the PLRA, Prison Litigation Reform Act, which allows the prisons to put a lien on indigent inmates' canteen account for filing fees if and when they seek redress in the civil courts. No other group of indigents are charged filing fees or required to pay later. And it impacts inmates, many of whom are black, so it's discriminatory for them. So I hoped, but Obama didn't get it done, and of course, he'll never be able to now. There really is no ray of hope generally. It's a declining empire. And as for me and my case, well, I guess all I can do is pray. Maybe that's why I became a Christian. Wait a minute, you were supposed to be COTC. What the hell is this? As for my work, I will continue to speak the truth. People are starting to listen and believe little by little, but it is a little too late. The lessons of 38 say no. I note you are continuing to do your part well. Thank you for that and for your support. My case again, Aryan ally and friend. Okay. It's a little hard to read. Sometimes the prisoner's scratch is a little bit tough. George Loeb Jr. Well, it's too bad he went back to Christianity, but he's still a racist. There's no doubt about that. Same way with David Tate. He's still Christian identity, but we still support him. Okay, that's done. If you caught on to what I was talking about yesterday about unintended circumstances, not uncontended circumstances, it was unintended consequences. Well, I believe in sort of a reverse psychology and say intended circumstances. Because, you know, in the past when most of us started out as conservatives, we were always whining about the government all the time doing bad things. Well, a lot of times if you follow those bad things to the end, it's a good thing for us, even though it's not good while it's happening. It can hurt you, can hurt me, can hurt everybody. But sometimes you got to go through the mess to get to the other side. And so if you see the government doing something really bad, well, I think we should encourage it, you know, because it can't last forever, this empire. And they do so many stupid things. Don't be impolite and interfere, you know. Say, in the end, it'll, in many cases, serve our interests. So I call that intended circumstances. Take what your enemy dishes out and rejoice because he's not thinking it through. And let him go because he's eating his own tail, man. I shouldn't complain about what the government's doing that's wrong, because everything it's doing wrong is eroding its strength and power. Talked about this years ago. If two people are voting, if you have to vote, vote for the worst one. Yeah, worse is better. It's a lot of the old right wing. They just couldn't understand that. like I call it, jiu-jitsu. Well, it sort of reminds me of when I used to hunt as a kid. I don't hunt anymore. I don't have the heart to hunt. Unless I'm starving, of course I would hunt. But I used to go out in the woods back here about a quarter of a mile from where I'm at right now. And I'd kick up a rabbit, and they'd run. It would run, and you just step up on a stump and get yourself a little elevation and wait. And after a while, here'd come that rabbit. He'd make a great big circle. He'd come right back where he started, and there you got him. That's a lot like your enemy. Instead of chasing him around and worrying about everything he does, just stay in one place and watch him screw himself up. Sort of like that, those rabbits. Rabbits were smarter than the politicians, so that's for damn sure. I don't know whether you remember an actress called Mae West. She was quite a popular figure back in the day. A lot of comedies. She played in a lot of Western shows and so forth. And she had a saying. She said, when I'm good, I'm good. And when I'm bad, I'm better. I like that. Yeah, how about that? Hey, I want to turn you on to a good movie. It's a silent movie. And I got it on Hulu, I believe. Or Netflix. I think it was Hulu. But it's called The Last Command, made in 1928. And it's about the Russian Revolution and some Russians who escaped the Bolsheviks and got over here to Hollywood. Anyhow, this guy became a Hollywood director. He was from Germany. He went back to Germany in 1938, I think it was. Started making films for the Third Reich and joined the National Socialist Workers' Party. And he made movies right up until 1945. And then he, 5 years later, he died. But it's an interesting situation there of a guy who thought more about race and so forth than he did just being around Hollywood. Because he had been successful. He made 3 or 4 movies in Hollywood. And I didn't write down his name, but just find The Last Command. You'll find it an interesting film. I really rarely watch a boxing match anymore because there's hardly ever any white guys on it. But I just happened to stumble onto one title fight, welterweight fight, I believe, the other evening. And it was a Filipino against a Negro, American Negro. And the Negro was favored. But the style of the Filipino was very good. The Negro wanted to go for the knockout. And he was throwing himself all over the place, trying for that one punch to knock this Filipino out. The Filipino just kept not falling for it and falling back and dodging and weaving. And all through the fight, it was a 12-rounder. Ended up towards the end of the fight, the black was tireder than hell. His legs were gone and everything else because this little Filipino was just playing games with him. And so it ended up the Filipino won the title. But it's a lot like politics. Our enemies want to hit us like a sledgehammer and a fly. And they expend a lot of energy doing it. And sort of remind me of that fight. Well, we conserve our energy, and we can decide when we want to do something, when we don't. And that's the conservation of energy that you can win against a more powerful enemy that way. So anyhow, there's a lot of things like prize fight that there's allegories there that are good to know. We just have to keep the struggle going till the system loses its legs. And once they've lost their legs, they've lost the fight. Well, let's see what Super Populous has to say about the CEOs.
One difference between top executives and worker bees is that those at the top can lower the pay of those down below while simultaneously raising their own pay. If you wonder what's causing America's rapidly widening income gap, there it is. Technically, CEOs do not set their own pay levels, supposedly leaving that to the board of directors. The typical board, however, is a CEO pushover, largely made up of other highly paid CEOs and brothers-in-law of the corporate boss. But in response to public disgust at the grotesque excess in the platinum paychecks of top bosses, corporations have added a new level of pay police to oversee the process. Compensation consultants, they're called. These specialists are hired to analyze industry-wide data to advise corporate boards on the going rate for top dogs, thus assuring an impartial assessment on pay that can calm public furor. Really? Surely you joke. Guess who hires the consultant? Astonishingly, the board often delegates that delicate assignment to the CEO. But even when the board runs the process, the chief's pay keeps going up, up, and away. One reason is that board members like to brag to their country club peers that they have the hottest of hotshot CEOs, and you don't prove that by paying chump change. Corporate world measures everything by money, so its cultural ethic dictates that a top-notch top dog is defined by a spectacular level of pay, and the best is the one who commands the most. This is Jim Hightower saying, the contrived, self-serving corporate dogma that multimillion-dollar executive compensation is determined by the invisible hand of the mysterious marketplace is pure Wizard of Oz hokum. A truer system of establishing a CEO's worth would be the old pirate system. Let every worker on the corporate ship vote on it.
Thank you, Jimmy. That was a good thing you did right there for the working man. Let's visit the KKK again here. The left-wingers, I guess what you'd call them. As the world braces for the verdict in the shooting of police officer Darren Wilson, of an unarmed black teenager, Michael Brown, in August, the hacker group Anonymous has promised a bombshell by the end of the day. Anon Cop Watch, one of the many anonymous Twitter accounts, has said that it will release evidence before the close of the business day on Thursday that Darren Wilson has ties to the KKK. Aghast. The August 9th shooting of 18-year-old Brown has led to months of protests, vastly peaceful. Though things have been quiet in recent weeks, on Wednesday night, police and protesters clashed in front of the Ferguson police station again. Anonymous, which is one of the D's operations, or operatives, I guess, they've been bragging about how they break into everybody's their accounts and getting all this top secret information. Now, this cop could have received a piece of paper from the KKK, and that makes him a full member, according to these guys, which has been hacked by KKK member accounts and publicizing their personal information for almost a week. Oh, what geniuses you are, Anonymous. According to If You Only News, the group now says it is evidence Wilson is connected to the extremist group KKK. No part of the alleged data and information that Anonymous says will link Wilson to the KKK has been released. Instead, it will be released in full later on Thursday. Well, we'll see. This is later on Thursday. Well, not too late. Operating under the hashtag OPKKK on Twitter, the Anon Cop Watch has been promising for 2 days that there is a wealth of evidence and information linking Wilson to the Klan, KKK. On November 18th, an anonymous member on Twitter under the handle of Anon Cop Watch posted the following to eager followers who were asking for the partial release of information. Okay, let's see what that is. Arian Copwatch, I could post what we have now on Darren Wilson and his KKK ties, but we want to see how deep the rabbit hole goes first. I hope that he was a member. I hope he's a member. I hope let them go. Let that whole place go up in flames. After studying our leaked documents, I'm confident I can link Darren Wilson directly to the Akana family. Frank Akana is a local KKK leader who has been vocal in his comments to the media. However, Akana, whose formal KKK title is Imperial Wizard of the Traditionalist American Knights of the KKK, had disagreed with what he called fringe group fundraising efforts for Wilson, but hasn't stopped short of promising support. Earlier, Anonymous had posted a photo of three men identified as KKK members in the St. Louis area who had been photographed at a rally in support of Darren Wilson. Oh, wow, that makes him a Klan member. The poster was later removed from the Facebook page where it had been found. As tensions rise in Ferguson and St. Louis ahead of the grand jury decision on whether or not to indict Wilson, Anonymous has made a point of teasing the alleged connection between the KKK and Wilson. Okay, I think that grand jury decision is supposed to come out today or tomorrow. Oh, here's another statement. We will make a statement within 12 hours regarding the information we have obtained on Darren Wilson. Now, that was on 4:18 a.m., the 20th of November. Wait, that should be out now then. Members of the KKK have been known in recent months to generally be present at rallies in support of Wilson. Well, what's the big surprise? They've also been working hard to promote the KKK in the region, including passing out flyers to warn protesters that lethal force will be used in self-defense if necessary, which is totally legal. I wonder how many police informants and FBI informants and all that are in that Klan down there. I'll bet half of the members of that Klan are feds. Well, I'll bet you $10 this turns out to be a nigger on white woman crime. Wichita, Kansas. Wichita police say a woman was sexually assaulted, hit on the head, and then set on fire Monday night in Fairmont Park. You know, something about these niggers, they'd like to set people on fire, because I think it's very rare that you ever hear something like that about a white person. According to the police, a woman was on the ground almost in a crawl, barely moving and naked. The woman was helped by a neighbor. Johnny Marshall woke up her boyfriend, Dean McPherson, when she heard someone screaming for help. What if this was my daughter? I'd want somebody to go in and get her. Well, of course. The Wichita Eagle newspaper, quote, where there wasn't blood, there was a burning. I'll bet you if you hang on and check into that Wichita Eagle, you're going to find out that was a nigger that did it. Now, he may have done it to his nigger girlfriend or something like that, but beasts like that need to be put down, man. They need to be put down. Women going to have to be a lot more careful, of course. A lot of white women are messing around with these niggers, and what can you say when they get killed? Well, I see on down here in the article, police are still trying to figure out if this was random or if the woman was targeted. What makes the difference? Either way, Livingston called it a disgusting crime. Police are currently searching for a suspect, but the only information they have on him is he is a black male. There you go. Down here, they always say our hearts go out to the victim. Why not a mob go out to the perpetrator? Why not stringing the son of a bitch up? Shouldn't be too hard to find, even if you had to spread a little money around to local bars or something to find somebody. Yeah, that hearts go out to the victim, that's fine. But until you start putting revenge on these niggers, they're going to continue. What do you think they used to do down south when they lynched these bastards? Put the fear of God in the general black public. Don't do that. When you do that shit to white people or any people, We're going to hang your ass. Thanks to our She-Wolf EM for that one. Okay. But if I bet you if you tried to write a letter to that paper and say, we ought to hang that son of a bitch, they wouldn't print it and probably have the cops come out and interrogate you. Well, let's have a little break and have a little music here. Rusty Humphreys, how about that?
Help me with this, sir?
Yes, tell me.
What? Okay, so I want to get into the USA. What do I do?
Take this one. I'm going north.
North?
Yes, north.
Going north. Okay, I can do it. Let's go.
Now everybody has this notion. Come to the USA. Don't you worry about money. Stupid Americans pay. Yeah, they'll pay for your health care. Kids' education, too. Just sneak across the border, and they'll take care of you. Well, they're crossing from Tijuana, and California's line, and up in Vancouver, nobody seems to mind. In containers from China, yeah, you can stow away. USA, way down in Guadalajara, and from Pakistan, tell your friends you're leaving, then stuff them in your van. They're coming from Afghanistan, through San Francisco Bay. Everybody is sneaking into the USA. Well, they're coming from the galleys down Arizona way. Ask the government to stop it, and they just say no way. They're digging big old tunnels, you know they're coming to stay. Cause everybody is sneaking into the USA. Everybody is sneaking into the USA.
I love America. Yeah.
Everybody is sneaking into the USA.
We gotta get out of here, fellas. Go, 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 go.
I gotta get the words of that written down. I'm gonna sing that song when I do karaoke. I'll drive them nuts. They won't know what to say when I sing that song. Oh, man, that's a good one. I'm going to send you along the video that goes along with that. I might have sent that out before sometime. I don't remember for sure. But anyhow, it's coming at you, the whole thing, the audio and the video. It's hilarious. Well, here is a Christian joke today. Pope Francis is demanding just distribution of the world's wealth, telling a UN conference that access to food is a basic human right. Well, Mr. Pope, I'm going to tell you, you're full of shit, because it's not a human right, because there is no such thing as rights. You got the privilege of living on prosperous ground and raising food and eating well and not allowing the billionaires to corner the markets through their food cartels by using violence or whatever means, but you don't have a right as a basic human right to food. And why don't you sell some of that booty you've got down there in St. Peter's and distribute it? Whenever you go out and you're going to go around, he's even going to go to Detroit, I think. Well, whenever you go there, take $1 billion with you and spread it around. You got the money. You know the church has got the money. Yeah, Pope Francis, because you're the vicar of Christ. You talk to God all the time. Tell God what you want. If you need more money, God got plenty. Well, unless you didn't give it to him. You didn't give it to him? Oh. Well, the United States has lost its first place position in being the most generous country in the world. How about that? comes in second now. Burma, indeed, the practice of charitable giving, or dana, is integral to religious observance among the Theravada Buddhist, with it being one of the key paths to earning good merit. Maybe you get to go to holy heaven or something. Christian, Jewish, and Muslim clergy plead for interfaith tolerance at a news conference near the synagogue attacked earlier this week in Israel. That'll be the day. Religious tolerance, one towards the other. Never was, never will be. Boy, I'll tell you, some people will do anything to get a choich. Need to know how to ship a choich? Pastor Jarrell Keene of a Louisiana church needed a permanent church building for his Southern Baptist congregation. He found one in a 200-year-old Anglican church whose dwindling numbers of parishioners had put it up for sale in rural Nova Scotia. Boy, that's a hell of a long way from Louisiana. The church was disassembled and shipped over 2,000 miles, and now it's being rebuilt by the Louisiana church. How about that? Oh, isn't that wonderful? Praise J. Baby Jesus. Well, another day, another stunning blockbuster report. Jesus was married, and to Mary Magdalene, the prostitute, the whore. The latest version of this meme comes from Simcha Jacobi-Bijichi, an author and filmmaker who is famous for promoting stunning theories about Jesus that on further review often turned out to be dubious. Jacobovici's new claim that he has decoded the old text that reveals Jesus and the Magdalene were married and had two kids, and she was a co-deity with her husband, came out this month and has been widely dismissed. Well, they should widely dismiss Jesus because he never existed either. Mary Magdalene, she might have existed, but surely Jesus never did. And if you doubt that, go to JesusNeverExisted.com and get your head screwed on straight. Because here, Jukovici, his new claim that he has decoded the old text that reveals Jesus and Magdalene were married and had these two kids. Oh, I read that before. But as happened earlier this year, the so-called gospel of Jesus' wife, a suspect papyrus that receives a further debunking in the latest edition of Atlantic, people find Jesus' sex life endlessly fascinating and plausible. Well, yeah. The part about God having sex with Mary, boy, that's something else. That's really porn, if you ask me. Well, one more story about that Jesus guy. If Jesus isn't the guy next door, there's a growing recognition by modern Christians that he was a first-century Jewish man, but that recognition also brings along an assumption, or maybe a stereotype, that all Jewish men get married and have a bunch of kids, or want to. That wasn't necessarily the case in Jesus' day, as Vanderbilt University Bible scholar Amy Jill Levine, among others, has noted. There are, in fact, accounts of monastic, I have trouble with that one, like communities of celibate Jews, such as the Essenes, that may have drawn adherents like John the Baptist or even Jesus. They were praised by the contemporary chronicler Philo of Alexander for an enviable system of life, and that was hailed by the kings and ordinary people alike. Not to get married, not to have kids. Well, I wish the Jews would have stuck to that, and none of them have kids. We'd be in much better shape. Why aren't people proud to be racist? I'm very, very extremely proud to be a white racist. Over in England, this was in a bus in London. It's a scene many commuters will be familiar with. The first noises of a commotion trickle down a carriage. A raised voice, perhaps an obscenity, turned the atmosphere blue. Passengers exchange knowing looks. This is a rare event when strict anonymity of public transportation is broken and strangers form a temporary bond of stupidity. Quote, You think you can disrespect me because you're an Indian? Came the yell on a morning commuter train from Manchester to London this week. Quote, this is my country. I stand up to see a middle-aged suited man walk straight up to an aging passenger of Indian dothead origin. Finger pointed directly in his face. Quote, disrespect me and I will end you, unquote. Slightly miffed that no one else had intervened at this point, I told him to leave the carriage or the bus and take his racism with him. I reassuring murmur of approval from fellow passengers followed. Stupid follows stupid. And although racist suited man barked something back, he retreated to the toilet, otherwise known as the crapper. A couple of minutes later, he emerged to yell, quote, I'm not a racist, by the way, unquote, provoking laughter and ridicule. Jeez. Why not say, goddamn, yes, I'm a racist. I have never, you know, I haven't in decades and decades and decades denied I'm a racist. People ask me, are you a racist? I, you know, smile and say, of course, aren't you? If they're white. I don't see what the problem is admitting you're for your own race and don't give a damn about the other races. One thing for sure, they don't give a damn about your race, and you're seeing it play out every day. You know, I never did like Bill Cosby because he, for one thing, all the stupid white people got all excited over Bill Cosby. And he took a couple of conservative positions and they rolled over and played dead. The latest allegation added to the snowballing public anger surrounding Cosby as a woman comes forward to say she was drugged and raped by the comedian way back in 1976. Horrific stories about Bill Cosby were out there for years. Why are we only now listening to these women? Well, it's simple, because you're into this negrophilia. Niggers, we got to make up for something that our ancestors had nothing to do with. The ruling class may have crimes they need to answer for, but they never really did. They passed it off on the working class. A seventh named woman has come forward to allege she was sexually assaulted by Bill Cosby amid a snowballing furor around the comedian's past. Finally, Teresa Saragnese of Boca Raton, Florida, gave an interview to WPTV West Palm Beach, in which she said she had been drugged and raped by the TV star in 1976 when she was 19. She alleged that Cosby, who was then headlining on the Las Vegas Strip, invited her to attend his show, and at the end of the after party handed her three large white pills and told her to take them. Well, it shows that this white woman was a little stupid anyhow. Saragnese said she had felt she could not say no, to a nigger, because to offend a nigger is the height of impropriety. Authority figure, older man, he was 20 years older than me. Ah, well, I took them. If he told you to take Kool-Aid a la Jim Jones, would you have done that too? Didn't know where they were, didn't even ask, didn't know what they were. I was just intimidated, I guess, by this wonderful Negro man. I took them. My next memory is feeling drugged and having sex with me. Signorese said Cosby let her stay in his penthouse suite for several weeks after the alleged attack. The latest allegations add to the sense of unraveling the standing of career most storied American celebrities, who is scheduled to perform stand-up theater in Melbourne, Florida on Friday night. Well, you know what's happened. The Jews don't need him anymore. They've made all the money they want off of him, Bill Cosby. So, as they usually do, something comes up, they throw him to the wolves. And that's lone wolves, baby. Cosby, you're going down, brother.
Well, I was 19, and I went to Las Vegas to visit my mother, who lived there at the time. And I was with my younger sister, She was with me. I can specifically remember my sister Cecilia was with me. And we were in the Hilton Hotel looking at the jewelry counter, the fake jewelry. And it was a gift shop. And I remember standing there, and all of a sudden somebody came up from the back and put their arm around me in this area and whispered or said, "Will you marry me?" And I turned around to see who that was. And I looked over my shoulder, and it was Bill Cosby.
Stop right there. So what was your first thought, like thinking that Bill Cosby, this big-time actor, comedian, is coming?
I knew he was headlining there. I knew who he was. He was a big star. I smiled. That was exciting. I was amazed.
Okay, so you guys end up going to the show.
We talked a little bit, and he asked me, "Would you like to come see my show?" Of course I would. What he told me to do was just give a call, and they would, you know, let me in. So when I called up the hotel, I said, "Bill Cosby said to give a call that I could come see the show." And so they said, "Come on down, and this is where you go." And so that's what I did, and they escorted me to the front row. I got to see the show from the front, and thoroughly enjoyed it. I was, who didn't love Bill Cosby? So after the show, I was directed to go follow this person, and they took me back to the green room, where I'd be again meeting Bill Cosby. Very excited. There was lots of people there, just smiling, happy, talking to him. I sat down on a small, like a love seat size couch, and just sat in the corner, that corner. And I remember just sitting there. I don't know what period of time went by. I was shy. I was kind of uncomfortable because I didn't know what to do. I didn't have a conversation back then. I just sat there. And one by one, people left. And then it was only me and him. And my next memory is that he stood before me, and he, in his hand, he had two big, large white pills, and he said, "Take these."
Did he say what they were for?
No.
Just said, "Take
these." Just take these. Okay. He was standing before me, and, you know, to me, it was like Bill Cosby, authority figure, older man. He was like 20 years older than me. Well, I took them. Didn't know what they were, didn't even ask. I just was intimidated, I guess. And I took them. Then my next memory is feeling drugged and him having sex with me. My next memory is telling my mother what happened.
So you told someone?
I told my mother. And my mother was like a 50-ish year old woman at the time and divorced, and she just looked at me and she said, "Well, maybe he'll take care of you." How does one process whatever that was, whatever happened, whatever is in my mind at 19? Because I didn't expect that. I was going to see Bill Cosby's show. And, you know, and looking back, yeah, it's always going to make me feel like teary-eyed, and because the pain never goes away, the betrayal of my trust, the situation. This was a man who was like 20 years older than me. This was a man, and, you know, in those days, there was not a lot of interracial dating. I came from Dearborn, Michigan. He was black. I was white. And he was married. He was a married man. It was not in my wildest dreams that would occur. People say, "Well, why wouldn't you report it?" In 1976, that was a shameful thing to occur to a girl. You did not report that. They would victimize you. They would blame you. They would accuse you. Nothing would happen to that person. That experience, which was not good, was bad. Trying to assimilate that into my young girl's mind. And called him, I guess. I must have called him, and he had me come over. And
this was during the same time frame.
It would have been shortly thereafter.
Okay, so
shortly thereafter.
Okay.
It could have been the day, 2 days, shortly thereafter. And they knew who I was, to just tell Bill Cosby, tree picking is calling. He knows what he just did to me. So I did. I called him, probably went over there. And then I ended up, I guess, I remember having a room. I had a room there at the penthouse of the Hilton, in a room. Probably had a queen-size bed in there. It was a nice, clean room. It was the penthouse. He had all his Miles Davis albums in the living room. A pinball machine was up there in that room. It was the top of the Hilton. It was his suite. And I don't know what the period of time was, but the period of time was long enough that one day I came to him and I guess I thought I was pregnant. And so the memories are fragmented, yes. Times, I don't recall on what day that was, but I remember when I said that to him, I was told to leave.
The first incident was...
No. There was another time where years went by. I think I in total maybe saw him at least 4 times. I saw him. But there was probably more speaking to him on the phone. There was some kind of relationship where we would talk on the phone. Years later, I think I was in town visiting my mom, and at that time I had my child, and I called Bill Cosby up. I guess I felt like, well, we had some kind of a relationship now. I didn't know what it was. I guess I tried to make the best out of it, because I guess that's what you do. You just try to make the best out of it in your own head. And I was in town, and I said I was in town, and I guess I really always just really wanted to see his show. That, you know, he always impressed me. I thought he was a great comedian, and even though he did what he did, I didn't hate him. I didn't want ill will for him, but I have always wanted him to know that it hurt me, and I have always wanted to know that he did me harm by doing what he did. And that's why I'm coming forward now. I came down here to Florida, lost everything, came down to Florida. My sister said, how about calling Bill Cosby and making him make good on that promise? He said he'd give you money for this A's. It was devastating for me because I was reaching out to him in a place where, you know, you did this to me, and now I never caused him any ill will or harm. I never told on him. I never told on him. And he did what he did, and I just lay silent there like it was okay. And then he had the nerve to treat me like a victim, like I did something wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. He was humanitarian. He was helping people. He was donating money. I just was asking him to make good on what he said when he said it. I was proud that I did good. I went to nursing school. I would have been financially set forever.
But barf, barf. There's about 6 more minutes of that interview, but I couldn't take any more. This bitch is as bad as he is. Now, after the first time he drugged her and screwed her, she comes back for more and keeps having contact with him. I wonder if that kid was his, and a half-black kid. But this broad, as far as I'm concerned, her credibility isn't worth a shit. You catch that, what the mother said? Well, can you get anything out of him? The mother was as bad as the daughter. I love the way the blacks use the threat of demonstration as a threat of violence against white people or the people who are on the grand jury, all that kind of stuff. They've used it successfully for a long time. And then when they get out of line and the cops come down on them, they're, oh, it's racism. We know how it's played. Listen to this guy here. This is one of the This is
the fact that there are going to be mass demonstrations in the aftermath of the grand jury decision if they decide not to file felony charges against Darren Wilson, who shot to death Mike Brown on August the 9th, is inevitable. This is a call that is going out all over the United States. It's good that U.S. Congressman Don Lewis has called for mass demonstrations. He was the former chair of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and played an integral role in the early phase of the civil rights movement. However, it doesn't matter who actually is calling for demonstrations now. These demonstrations have been planned for months. The suspicion of the people in Ferguson, in St. Louis County, as well as around the United States, and indeed the world, is that racist violence is not something that the United States government is interested in stopping and prosecuting those who perpetuate racist violence. This is even more egregious because these are hired agents of the state. The police represent the state. They represent private property. And what it says is that the interests of private property is more in regard to the interests of the African-American people. So I believe that these demonstrations are going to take place. The FBI earlier this week called for police departments across the country to prepare for mass demonstrations and unrest. And this will happen inevitably. What has distinguished the situation in Ferguson from other cases of police violence and terrorism is that the African-American youth, along with their allies, rose up in rebellion for several weeks. And, of course, the demonstrations and the unrest continue, and they will proceed until justice is achieved, not only for Michael Brown, but for the countless other victims of police violence inside the United States. This is still a racist country. The country was born out of the genocide and forced removal of the Native Americans and the enslavement of the African people. Therefore, it is continuing its tradition of racism, genocide, and national oppression. And this will not end until there's a fundamental change in the both political as well as economic structures of the United States.
Now, I wish this country was as racist as this guy put it. Of course, it's racist to a large degree, but it's cowardly racist. And wake up and smell the coffee, brother. Of course, property goes beyond people. White or black, it don't make any difference. The Republican Party is the property class, and they're going to protect whoever has the most property. And if whites have the most property, they're going to defend the whites with the property. And if the blacks get the property, they're going to defend the blacks with the property because they are the property party. Don't you get it? And I wish this was happening in the summer. God damn, it's cold outside. I'd like to have it in summer, July or August, with about 99% humidity. Woo-hoo-hoo! How many times now has somebody been caught next to the White House with guns and ammo and all that stuff? This is about third or fourth time, isn't it? Well, if they keep trying, somebody may get it done. But if I was Obamsky, I wouldn't feel very safe anymore up there. Well, I guess Whole Foods, I guess that's a grocery store, tried to reverse this fat Negro thing. A couple of years ago, as winter gave way to spring, Tyoda Ruff began to think about changing how she ate. Ruff had always been heavy, but her son, Tariq, a freshman honor student, aren't those niggers always honor students, had recently crossed the 300-pound mark, prompting Ruff to ferry him to appointments at a children's weight loss clinic 11 miles away in Detroit's Midtown neighborhood, and to document everything he ate for 2 months. At 270 pounds, her husband, Jermaine Harris, wanted to slim down too. Ruff was beginning to see her family's weekly fast food habit and visits to the Golden Corral's all-you-can-eat buffet as a possible problem. As Ruff mulled over these changes, a friend cajoled her into joining a healthy cooking class at their church. Ruff was on medical leave from her job as a probation officer due to an injury, and the break gave her time to consider her meals. Well, probably the reason she had an injury is because she's too fat, she can't motivate, and she fell down. The more she thought about eating healthy, the more intrigued she was by a new store, Whole Foods, which had just opened up in Detroit. It was the news people were talking about at church. Everybody was talking about it. Let's see here. Whoa. That included people outside Detroit, too, as the city neared bankruptcy. National media questioned why a grocer derided his whole paycheck in nod to the chain's long-standing strategy of charging a premium for organic, local, and sustainable food would open a store there. Whole Foods' answer was even more surprising. The store said company leaders was about social equity as much as profit. We're coming to confront the disconnect between the accessibility and the affordable and healthy food, declared Walter Robb, the co-CEO of Whole Foods, in an early 2012 address to Detroit business leaders. We got to slim down these niggas, man. There would be lower price. Yeah, but you're going to drive the fast food places out of business and the soft drink people. That's going to hurt the property party. There would be lower prices, too, to make the store accessible to all of Detroit. Rob's nod to the growing dietary gap between rich and poor was surprising for a man leading a company known for appealing to white-moneyed foodies. Now, I wonder, you know, for people that are deprived and discriminated against and with no money to get in food stamps, how they get to be 300 pounds. How do they get? They got to eat a hell of a lot of food. But they had to have somebody come to town and say, you just don't eat so much and eat right. And they still don't get it. They still see them on TV, 200 or 300 pounds, and now the white people are right behind them doing the same thing. Well, they got an exhibit opened up in Paris. It's got caged Negroes in it, you know, live Negroes sitting in a cage. Let's see what's going on there, huh? I'll see.
A woman from Birmingham has gathered a petition of over 10,000 names urging one of the country's leading art centres to cancel an exhibition which features black actors in chains and cages. Sarah Myers claims it's an offensive betrayal of the community, but the Barbican, which is hosting the show, says it's a thought-provoking exploration of black history. Here's our arts reporter, Satnam Rana.
The woman shackled to a bed, the man wearing a metal mask. This is art depicting the horrors of slavery. Exhibit B is somewhere between an exhibition and a piece of theatre, created by white South African artist Brett Bailey.
I take colonial history, I take the atrocities that were committed under colonialism, right from the beginning of the 19th century all the way up until the liberation in the 1950s, 1960s, and then I look at the residues of racism, or the racism we're still living with today.
But this Birmingham campaigner is spearheading a petition to stop it from opening at the Barbican in London.
It's offensive. It's like our narrative is always being told from the perspective of being enslaved or in servitude, when there is so much more to African history than just slavery.
But the Barbican insists this show constitutes important work for us all.
It absolutely does not endorse in any way racism. It aims to educate people. It aims to expose these terrible histories. And I think it's very important that arts organisations like the Barbican engage in this sort of debate.
Over 12,000 people have now signed the petition opposing the show.
It's actually quite rude in 2014 that an institute like the Barbican thinks that putting black people in cages is challenging art and it's important work for London. I keep saying to them, who is it important for?
Exhibit B is due to open at the end of the month. It's a show which has raised the question of who is qualified to represent certain communities through art. Satnam Rana, BBC Midlands Today.
Well, there you go. If you want to see Blacks in a Cage, I'll send you a copy of this. They're putting the blacks in the cages and call it art. And the guy's from South Africa. Boy, is his mind screwed up. But maybe it'll work in our favor, because maybe this putting blacks in a zoo is going to catch on. What do you say? You know, there's more than one way to look. You know, this woman was trying to speak for everybody when this white, middle-aged woman was trying to speak for everybody. Well, we don't see it that way. Well, other people do see it that way. I love it. Well, that's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Freya's Day, bright and early. Yeah, Freya's Day. She-Wolf Day in the bunker. Okay, shut your mouth. Shut your pie hole. I have nothing to say. You want to talk to me, get a warrant. Call my attorney, okay? Just keeping your mouth shut is better than having an attorney.
Well, let's see, there's Kalamazoo.
Have you seen him? I was trying to find him. I was looking everywhere for him. I was for the golden-throated one.
Oh, John.
Yes, for Johnny Cash. Well, I was looking for him. I've got to find him.
Well, no. Oh, here he is. John, come over here. Hi. John, I certainly want to thank you for appearing with us here on our program. All night long I've seen June in and out of here looking for you. It seems like she's worried about some trip you're planning. Are you going?
Well, I was going to take her down to see Carl Perkins in Jackson.
Oh, in Jackson.
Yeah.
Well, I thought you maybe were going to Kalamazoo or Springfield or some Jackson.
It's not far.
Jackson. Oh, don't let him fool you. He's trying to get away without me.
Oh,
that's the way the song goes.
Oh, this is where I go out, too.